You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com. Hello there, Reds fans. Welcome back to yet another edition of the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. We're back once again from Red Leg Nation World Headquarters. Appreciate you joining us. I don't know, again, why you've downloaded us, but I appreciate the fact that you have listened to us ramble about the Cincinnati Reds for a little bit. Got lots of things we want to discuss today. It's been a fairly interesting week or two in the Reds, in Red Leg Nation, really, in Reds land. And to join me today to talk about all that, those things, fellow editor at RedLegNation.com, Bill Lack. How you doing today, Bill?
I'm here to provide veteran leadership today.
Oh, that's what we count on you for it. At Red Leg Nation, that veteran leadership.
Yep, it's worth $11 million a year.
Oh, well, you're vastly underpaid then. I hope you're not expecting me to cut that check anytime soon.
No, I think I can. I think I can. I'll let it appreciate.
There you go. Well, that brings us right into what we wanted to talk about first. Obviously, we've passed the trade deadline here, the non-waiver trade deadline, and the Reds made a couple of deals. And, of course, the one that's on everybody's mind is the fact they traded Edwin Encarnacion, third baseman, and then a couple of pitchers, young pitchers, Josh Reneke and Zach Stewart, to the Toronto Blue Jays in exchange for that noted veteran leader, Scott Rolen. Any initial thoughts about this deal, Bill, that you can say without using keeping family-friendly language? Let's say that.
I'm the one that kind of worded most of the poll about this on the blog. And I'm the one that came up with that I feel like the Reds management has kind of sunk to the level of the Cincinnati Bengals. This deal, I don't think, can be justified in anybody's mind. I've heard all the arguments, and I just don't buy any of them. I've got, three issues that I see with this deal. Actually, four. The issue is, as much as, I know Encarnacion was a big favorite of yours, and I liked him. He's a reasonably young, major league, average offensive player. He's not ungodly expensive. The issue isn't trading him. I don't have a problem with trading him. I have a problem with that they gave up him and probably their two best arms in the minor leagues right now. I have an issue with them trading him for an injury-prone, expensive 34-year-old third baseman. And the offshoot of that is, to me, it shows like the Reds front office has ADD. They have an inability to stick to any kind of a plan for the future. I remember, and I haven't been able to dig up a quote, but it seemed to me like I remember Jocketty saying right before the trade deadline that we're not going to trade our best prospects, or we're not going to unload prospects. And what do? They trade their two best arms. And he even said, I think the quote was, and this is not the exact wording, it's real close, we gave in to what they wanted. You don't give in and give your best two arms away for a 34-year-old third baseman. It doesn't make any sense to me.
That's almost exactly what he said, that we finally gave in and decided to give up the pitching. You've hit on pretty much the points that I really – had the issues I had with the deal. A couple of things first, you did mention, and we've talked several times about Edwin Encarnacion, about how he's my favorite player, but that I've never objected to trading Encarnacion, even though he was my favorite Red. If you could get something to improve the team, no reason he should have been untouchable. So, although I hate to see Encarnacion go, that's really way down on my list of issues with this trade. You mentioned the poll, and I want to go ahead and just give the updated results right now on that poll. We put a poll up on RedLegNation.com, and Bill did come up with a wording of this. And at this point, the question was, what do you think about the Scott Rolen trade? And we're, a little over a week after the trade. Right now, with 40% of the vote, it's Rolen's not worth three players, especially two very talented young pitchers. And that's what you hit on. I think, Reneke, I didn't have a problem trading Reneke in the right deal. And frankly, wouldn't have had a problem trading Zach Stewart in the right deal. The problem is, I just don't see this as being the right deal for this franchise right now. Stewart has some filthy stuff. Stewart is very highly regarded. And of course, you've seen all the quotes from around baseball, anonymous quotes from general managers and other executives saying, what were the Reds thinking, about this? And about Reneke, too. He's evidently got a pretty people feel pretty highly about him around the league. He throws so hard, and I think he could have helped.
You don't find guys that throw 96, 97, 98. They don't grow on trees.
No, they don't. And he's done nothing but perform in the minor leagues. I have a big issue with trading those two guys, not with trading Edwin. So I'm with you on that. Second place right now in the poll, slightly ahead of the third place one, is with 23% of the vote. Reds management has sunk to the level of Cincinnati Bengals management. Clueless. And, I'm actually a little surprised that's that high on the poll results so far. I thought people would try to be more optimistic. Number three with 21% is too soon to tell. But I think that goes back to what you say about not having a plan. And, I had hopes when we heard those quotes from Jocketty before the deadline. I had hopes that there was a plan in place. And you and I have mentioned, if we mentioned it once, we mentioned it 100 times, including here on the podcast, that we always thought that 2010 was the year this team could really compete based on the young talent this organization had if they built the right plan around those young guys and didn't screw things up. Well, I'm skeptical at this point about whether or not this particular management team is going to be able to, whether they have a plan, number one, and even if they have a plan, which I don't know what it could be, how they're going to execute that to be competitive in 2010. I just don't see it now.
Yeah, I think, I was real positive about the directions they were taking all season until this deal. I mean, I wasn't happy that they didn't go out and get a bat in the off season, but I could live with that. I my feeling was that they were looking ahead another year, and they were going to see what developed in their minor league organization. But this is almost like, to me, it almost is like a panic move. We got to do something. We got to do something. The fans expect us to do something. Well, yeah, they probably do, but don't do something wrong just to do something. The bad trade, in my opinion, or apparently our opinion, and then compounding that with the loss of Volquez for next year, which makes trading these two pitchers even worse, assuming, that Stewart was going to be a starter. And I know that's what everybody's saying, but I don't know too many guys that were relievers in college ball that became starters in Major League ball. Maybe there are more, and I don't follow it all that closely, so maybe there are a lot of them. But I still saw his future, no matter what anybody else was saying, is a reliever in the big leagues. But the Reds are going to be looking for at least one starter next year. And there's a lot of people that are unhappy with Owings, even though I think for a number five, I think he's been fine. He drives you crazy at times, but he's a five, But, again, now you've got a hole at shortstop, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. You still got a hole in the outfield. Gomes and Nix are not the answer. They won't. I don't think either one of them will probably be back next year.
I don't either.
You got a 34-year-old third baseman that hasn't played over 120 games, I don't think, in 3 or 4 years. So you're going to need to get some production out of that position on games that he doesn't play. I don't see how they compete next year with the deals that, with the situation the way it is now. And the issue now for next year is the payroll.
Right.
I did some quick number jotting, and between Arroyo, Harang, Cordero, Roland, and now, they're saying that Toronto's going to pay part of Roland's salary next year, but my guess is it isn't much, or the Reds would be telling us how much it is. Hernandez, Phillips, and Taveras, you've got almost $66 million tied up for next year.
Well, Hernandez has a club option, I think, though, so they may not pick that up. But still, the point stands. They're not going to have.
Is a buyout $1 million?
$1 million buyout, yeah. And it's a $500,000 buyout on Alex Gonzalez, which I'll start taking up a collection for right now. We'll get into shortstop in a little bit, and we'll get into Volquez a little bit more in just a moment. But yeah, you're right. With all those guys, two problems that come to mind immediately. Number one, you're not going to have any flexibility with respect to payroll. And number two, if you try to deal Arroyo or Harang to free up some more roster flexibility, well, that's another spot you're going to have to fill for next year to find another pitcher. So they put themselves behind the eight ball, looks like to me, with respect to money.
Yeah, the Roland deal really hurts them in terms of money. We've talked about this on the blog, the Harang and Arroyo deals, when they were made, there weren't too many of us that were unhappy with the deals. There were a couple of people, Chris, one of our other editors, voiced some skepticism, but even he wasn't real adamant about, this is a terrible deal. you know, he said, I think he said something along the lines of, you know, I have a bigger problem with doing this for Arroyo than I do with Harang or vice versa. I can't really remember.
Right.
But at the time, we all thought this was a pretty good idea. We're tying these guys up for the next few years at what seemed like a reasonable salary.
I thought it was a good idea. I'll admit it.
You know, the Cordero deal, most of us, I know I was very unhappy when they signed this deal. You just can't afford to pay a closer $12 million on a team with a 70-some million dollar payroll.
I agree with that, but on the other hand, he's been outstanding since day one.
There's no argument of his production. Even last year when he was apparently pitched, you know, a little hurt with the ankle all year, he was still very, very effective. I have no problem with how effective he is. I have just a problem with limited resources and how you're allocating them.
You're right. If you got limited resources, you can't spend them on a guy that's going to pitch 50 innings or something.
Right. So. And you talked about Hernandez, and you're right, that is a club option for $8.5 million. But I looked up the two young guys that we traded him for, and Justin Turner's playing Triple-A ball, playing second base. He's got a 305, 359, 399, and a 758 OPS.
Not bad for a second baseman.
Yeah, I mean, he would be looking at, if they follow through with moving Phillips, he would have been shoehorned right in. He could have started for the Reds next year.
Yeah.
And the other guy, Brandon Waring, now he's still playing high A ball, and I'm not real sure why, but he's only 23. But he made the All-Star team again this year. He's made the All-Star team at every level he's played, and his OPS right now is 856. He's got 19 home runs and 71 RBIs. Now, I'm not real sure why he hasn't been promoted. You know, I don't follow the Orioles organization close enough to say, but those are two guys I'd sure like to have back.
Sure. And I'd rather have, when you talk about third base prospects and the rest of my leagues, I'd give up Juan Francisco easily for Brandon Waring, if you ask me.
Well, and that's the other thing, and I know we're going to talk about Frazier, and maybe we can move into that now, about Frazier moving to second base, which goes into the Phillips thing moving. I really don't understand the Reds' thinking. Even if they move Phillips to second base, unless the long-term plan maybe is to move Frazier back to third. Because, I mean, even if Scott Rolen is here for this year and next year, at some point soon you're going to need a third baseman. Juan Francisco ain't it.
No.
And I've said this a million times, he makes Edwin Encarnacion look like Brooks Robinson. He's got 34 errors at third base this year in just over 100 games. That's brutal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can't figure out why the Reds organization hasn't figured out something else to try with him and move Frazier back to third base.
We've been complaining all year about, and I want to talk about one thing before we get into the Frazier stuff too much, but we've been complaining all year about Frazier playing left field or all over the diamond, really, instead of being at third base where, number one, he could have had a future with this organization, given, you know, that the Reds were obviously disenchanted with Encarnacion, and the fact that they didn't have a third baseman, as far as I could tell, on that team in Carolina, because Francisco is not going to play third base in the major leagues if he ever makes the major leagues. So, and I'm with you on that, and I don't understand what they've been doing with Frazier. But before we get into what they're doing now with Frazier.
But before we move on, I want to defend the Todd Frazier and left field thing a little bit.
No, I know where you're going with this, and I agree with what you're getting ready to say. Absolutely.
Going into this season, that seemed like the fastest way to get him to the major leagues.
I agree with that.
The Reds had holes in the corner outfield, and as bad as Encarnacion has been this year defensively at third base, in the past he's been bad, but he hadn't been this bad. So maybe they thought he would get better with age, and maybe that's why they left him there. And they've got a log jam at first base, so that's, you know, in double A, you know, with Logan and with Yonder. And so the first base wasn't really an option. In fact, Logan ended up playing a little bit of the outfield when Yonder was playing.
Right.
So I understand why the Reds tried Frazier in left field, but what I don't understand is why once they see that – how bad Francisco's been at third base and his inability to have any plate discipline. It's almost like they still see him as a prospect, and I just don't see it.
Yeah, he's dropping off my radar. Now, of course, you know, the Reds, they know a whole lot more than I do about specifics of these guys. But
absolutely.
But, you know, yeah, I was just sort of befuddled about why it was taking so long to make a move with respect to Frazier, because he's a guy, I mentioned it when I saw him play in Carolina, you just tell by the way this guy approaches every at-bat, the way he acts on the field, he's going to be a major leaguer. He is going to be a good major leaguer. I don't know how much of a star he'll be, but he will be a guy that will be productive in the major leagues. I really believe that. But we'll get back to Todd Frazier. We got a lot I want to talk about Frazier. But there's two things about this Scott Rolen deal that I wanted to mention before we pass it on. And the first thing is Scott Rolen himself. And a lot of us have been panning the trade and really two thumbs down on the trade. But, you know, I'll say this. I like Scott Rolen. You know, Scott Rolen's not a bad player. I like having him on the Reds. Actually, when the trade was made, I got really excited. And then I looked at the calendar. I realized it wasn't 2002. You know, 2002 Scott Rolen, I'd like to have. 2009 Scott Rolen, still a good player, great defensive player, and, you know, he's going to hit, you know, he and Ebron Encarnacion probably over the next couple of years are going to hit about the same, frankly. But so it's not the fact that I hate having Rolen on the team. I just hate what we gave up. Would you agree with that?
I think he's on the I don't think anyone would argue that he's on the downward side of his career. I think he doesn't fit in with what this team is supposedly trying to do, and that's go young. And that's where this makes no sense to me. You know, and you can talk about veteran leadership and that stuff all you want. But if we need veteran leadership from Scott Rolen, and I think Greg posted something today, and I haven't read the article yet. You know, what about Brandon Phillips? He was supposed to be the face of the franchise, the new leader. What about Cordero? What about Weathers? What about Harang? What about Arroyo? You know, Arroyo played in the Red Sox on some pretty damn good teams. Where's the veteran leadership there? Why does it have to come from Scott Rolen?
Yeah, how come none of these other guys have stepped forward to provide any of that leadership? Absolutely. Yeah, that's, you know, the whole veteran leadership thing is just absurd. On its face, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, somebody in one of the – and I apologize because I don't remember who it was. Somebody in one of the comments the other day when we were talking about the trade, to me, put it succinctly when he talked about veteran leadership. He said it's a non-identifiable thing that you put out there when you can't justify what you're trying to say with numbers.
Yeah, I saw that comment, and I agree.
It's
an argument you make when you don't have any facts. You know, intangibles type defense.
Yeah.
I think Chris Garber, one of our other editors at Red League Nation, really, he did the sort of Red League Nation editorial review of the trade. And this one statement he made, I think, sort of sums up my problems with it. Even if you like Scott Rolen, even if you like having him over at the hot corner for Cincinnati, and I don't mind seeing him in the lineup right now, obviously, but here's the quote. More than the talent involved, I just don't understand the rationale. Whether the third baseman is Edwin Encarnacion, Scott Rolen, or Mike Schmidt, the Reds are out of it for this year. So everything Jocketty gave up is contingent on Rolen's 2010 contribution, everything. Add up Edwin's 2011 contributions, the extra $6 million or whatever it's going to be that they're going to pay Rolen next year, plus the entire careers of Stewart and Renicky. And whatever that is, Rolen has to be that much better than Edwin in 2010 for it to be worthwhile. And, you know, and he didn't add this point, plus the Reds absolutely have to be competitive next year for the trade to make sense. So there's, as far as the rationale for this trade, I think somebody, well, I know what, the, I have a feeling I know what the rationale was, and that's Big Bob Castellini wants a winning record at some point. And screw a plan or being competitive, I think Big Bob had heard of this player. He was, a St. Louis guy when Bob was one of the minority owners in St. Louis. And I think Castellini was the driving force behind this, to be honest.
I think he may have been the tipping point. Because from everything you read, the trade was dead. And then, you know, right at the end, all of a sudden it heated up, and Jocketty even says that they gave in. And GMs, I wouldn't think, now I've never been in a meeting with a GM, I wouldn't think they traditionally give in. I think you give in because somebody behind you that writes your check says, I want this guy.
Could be, yeah. Yeah.
But here's a question. Do you think Walt Jocketty's calendar in his office still says 2002?
I think it might. I think it might. And he thinks that he's building the Cardinals. I'm looking forward to them getting Ray Lankford or somebody next.
I'm waiting for Pujols to come up out of the system.
Now, if that were to happen, I'd kiss Walt Jocketty on the mouth.
Even a little tongue, maybe.
Maybe for an Albert Pujols, definitely. I think that they, with this one deal, they have indicated that the whole thing we thought they were building for is just, they don't have their eyes on building for a team that can be competitive in 2010 and beyond. I think it's all about, let's see what we can do to try to get 82 wins one of these years. And yeah, I think it's a lot of it's marketing as well. I think a lot of players, a lot of average fans have heard of Scott Rolen's name. You know, hey, he's an all-star. You know, we've seen him in the all-star game. He's won gold gloves. Never mind that he's, going to be 35 and it's clearly on the downside of his career. One last thing, and this is something I thought of and I hadn't mentioned on the blog or anywhere, but I just wondered, we're all very disappointed about losing Zach Stewart. But let's be honest, a lot of, fans who sort of casually follow the Reds have never heard of Zach Stewart, although they may have heard of Yonder Alonso, last year's first-round pick. Of course, Stewart was a third-round pick in 08 last year. So you remember early in the day on trade deadline day, and I actually had that day off of work, so I was sort of following things pretty closely. The name Yonder Alonso was floated as definitely being a part of this deal for Scott Rolen. That's and, of course, all of us had a heart attack. And I started to wonder in the last little bit, I wonder if somebody in the Reds organization floated Alonso's name out there knowing that it was going to be Stewart and thinking that everyone would be relieved that it was just Zach Stewart and not Yonder Alonso. What do you think about that? Is that too much of a conspiracy theory?
No, it wouldn't surprise me a bit. The other thing is, now the deal's been made, I'm not convinced that I wouldn't have been happier with Yonder Alonso going to the Toronto and us keeping the two pitchers.
Especially now that Volquez is hurt and with pitching being such a premium, only in this organization, but everywhere.
I haven't given it a whole lot of thought, but I'm not sure. I think, in for a penny, in for a pound here, I'm not sure one would have been a whole lot worse than the other.
Yeah. Well, I'm worried that, Scott Rolen's already missed two games since he's been with Cincinnati. He's averaged 106 games the last four seasons. I'm worried that no matter who we gave up for him, that in the end, he's going to end up, not because he doesn't play well, but because he doesn't play as well as before since he's declining and because he's injured. I'm worried that the Reds are going to end up regretting this even more than if Scott Rolen played well. I'm really, really worried, really concerned about this, this trade.
Yeah, I hope the Reds are able to tell Red Leg Nation, I told you so, rather than vice versa.
Absolutely, and we always make the point that those guys they have more information than we do. They're smarter than we are. But right now, I just I'm baffled by this trade, and like I'm like you. I hope that at some point, I'd be happy to have Walt Jocketty on the podcast and let him just stick his tongue out and say I told you so. I'd love it. Love it.
Before we move off of the Reds' seemingly inability to – the Reds' ADD problem with staying with a plan. I want to touch on real quick the Joe Podnanski article that I posted something about the other day.
Interesting article.
I thought it was too. And it kind of degenerated into a discussion of a salary cap, and I don't think that's ever going to happen. And so I stayed out of the discussion. I don't think the union will ever allow that to happen, and there's all kinds of problems with that. And I was hoping that the discussion would stay on what the Reds' plan should be to be competitive, and it kind of got away from that. But I thought the article was very interesting to say that the Oakland model, what I'll call what's the name of the book?
Moneyball.
Pardon?
The Moneyball.
The Moneyball model apparently, it doesn't work anymore. The other teams have gotten too, they figured it out. The book sure helped. Is there, is there a way for the Reds or for other small market teams to be competitive, or is the Florida Marlins model, build for a year, wait till team P players get expensive, trade them away, blow it up, and start over? Is that the only way now that small market teams can be competitive? Those, to me, were the two theses of the article that I got. And I thought it was real interesting. And I don't know the answer. I think you can build with a farm system, but I think you have to be patient and you have to be focused, and the Reds aren't showing the ability to be either.
I agree. I think the Moneyball approach, depending on what you mean by the Moneyball approach, can still work. I get to mean specifically, you know, on-base percentage, which a lot of people think is the whole Moneyball thesis, although that was what the A's had seen as undervalued at that time. But, you know, you talk about the small market teams haven't been able to win with that approach. Well, the A's did, number one. But the reason why, I think, is less because of the approach, the theme of that book, as it was that the small market teams are being run by idiots in a lot of cases. You know, the Yankees and the Red Sox figured out, hey, this works. And, of course, they got the money to implement it, but they're the ones that are leading the league in on-base percentage now. Meanwhile, you look at the Royals, every player they trade for or sign has an on-base percentage that's just, you know, in the basement. The Reds haven't implemented any kind of strategy, which, again, goes back to they do have to be much more disciplined and focused, because when you got the money like the Yankees and Red Sox, you can make mistakes and use money to sort of cover those up, you know.
But when they're a much higher margin of error.
I agree. So I don't think that small market teams can't compete, as some people want to claim. And I think that the Moneyball approach, which is finding what's undervalued out there, I think the Tampa Bay Rays are a good example of seeing that maybe defense was a little undervalued, and that really contributed to their turnaround last year.
Drafting right. 1, 2, or 3 for, what, 6 or 7 or 8 years in a row sure doesn't hurt either.
Right, and that's what I was getting ready to say. In addition to having that focused approach and having those high draft picks, but making good picks, having good scouting and development. I think it's absolutely a necessity for the Reds to have to sink their money into scouting and development. And they're doing that a little bit more, but I just don't see the focused organization-wide plan to implement any kind of a plan, I guess is the way I should put that. So I thought it was a good article by Poznanski, as every article by him is.
Of all the things that were talked about in the comments section, the one thing that I would most like to see that I believe is the most possible would be a worldwide player draft.
Yeah. That absolutely, I agree, and that would even up the playing field a little bit, because you know the Reds have started to sink some money into Latin America, and looks like they may be having some fruits of that investment sometime in the near future with these kids, these 16-year-olds in the Gulf Coast League. But, I think that's got to happen at some point, don't you think?
It makes sense. You know, I think the rich teams will fight it, you know, because they can go down there and throw money around. $2 million in the Dominican, I would assume you could pretty much live like a king the rest of your life. I don't know that for certain. But, you know, so they can take a chance on a borderline guy. The Reds, when they're paying, you know, Yoman Rodriguez, $2 or $2.5 million, I forget which one it was, that's a huge investment for the Reds. It's, you know, for the Yankees, they write those checks every day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the Reds, well, no matter what happens going forward in the major leagues, whether it's a worldwide player draft or anything they try to implement to even up the playing field, the Reds and organizations like the Reds are going to have to be smarter anyway, because they don't have that margin of error that you were talking about earlier.
Yep.
But about the Florida Marlins model, I want to say this. You know, it's probably not the best in terms of relationship with the fans, maybe, or the casual fan. But I'll tell you this, I'd take 2 world championships in the last decade, like the Marlins have, or however long it's been, 2 in the last 12 years, whatever it's been.
I'd take 2 winning seasons in the last decade.
Gosh. Yeah, I wasn't going to go that far, but yeah, me too. But it's a different model. I think it's sort of more of a gamble, more of a crapshoot to do that. They got lucky, maybe. I think they might have been the wild card both times that they won the World Series. So, you know, I don't know if you can sort of plan for that as much as that be sort of a gamble you take and maybe get lucky on. I think that a disciplined approach to scouting development and to really trying to find inefficiencies in the market is what the way the Reds have to go. And I'm like you, I don't see it. I thought there may be some hint of it until this Scott Rowland trade. Now I'm just completely questioning everything I thought was going on with this organization.
Yeah, I think the off season is going to tell us whether this was a blip in the radar, you know, this was a panic move or a Castellini move or whatever, you know,
right,
brought this move about, and the Reds get back on task in the off season, or whether they go out and try to sign a 34-year-old, a Jermaine Dye to play left field, you know,
right.
which I, you know, to me would just be a humongous mistake. I mean, if they want to trade for a corner outfielder, that's fine. But get a guy that's young, that's going to be with them for a few years. I don't know who the answer is. I don't know. I couldn't even tell you who's going to be out. Who's going to be available?
Yeah. Well, you know, Rolfe's the type of guy that, and not necessarily him. I don't know that he fits with this organization, the playing field that we have, but. He's the type of guy you go out and acquire when you're a piece or two away, when you got these young guys and you're a piece or two away trying to fill in some holes. But that brings up a point that one of our favorite commenters, Sultan, in the comments put it about this Roland. He said, I'm not angry about acquiring Roland. I'm pissed about not acquiring a productive older player of that salary level in the offseason. If we were going to do that, why did we pass on guys like Bobby Abreu and Jermaine Dye? That and then screw any chance of contention this year. He put it because the offense was put together with Elmer's glue and Dusty's toothpicks. But now we can afford to take on salary while at the same time dealing away prospects. And he says there's no discernible logic when you look at the big picture over the last 12 months. So when you look at them being unwilling to spend money on an older player in the offseason, combined with all of a sudden 3 months later changing their mind, spending big money on a veteran player while giving.
After
you're out of the race, and then giving up top prospects to boot. Boy, it's just there's no logic to it. And if there is logic, I'd love for someone to explain it to me. And the phone lines are open, Mr. Jockety.
So we will always take your call.
Always, absolutely. So, oh, mercy. Well, we said we want to talk about Frazier. I want to talk about that in a minute, but there's something else I want to talk about before that we've already touched on as well, and that's the absolutely worst-case scenario that came down here recently with respect to Edinson Volquez. He had Tommy John surgery to repair a torn ulnar collateral ligament, and then there was a torn flexor mass in his right elbow. And so the procedure was done, and the Reds are saying that he's going to miss 12 months. And I know that what's his name? Will Carroll from Baseball Prospectus is questioning whether it'll be just 12 months. And I think the Reds have, trainer Mark Mann told John Fay that don't count on seeing Volquez until opening day 2011 at least. So, that's a blow to any hopes of contending next year. And do you think that Jockey regrets the Roland trade now because of that?
They knew there was something wrong with him. Why would you trade your two best arms when you know there's something wrong with your best young arm on the big club? And, you know, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but Doc Hollywood and his staff, once again, seem from a layman's perspective, I will say that I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on television, but it seems like, again, it's a misdiagnosis. I mean, they jacked around with this kid for what, 3 months before they figured out that his whole arm was blown out.
Yeah.
I don't understand that, and I'm not saying that I should understand it. You know, maybe it's beyond the layman's perspective, but you know, I read somewhere where they said the MRI was inconclusive.
Right.
It's like, you know, you would be able to find a way to get to make that kind of diagnosis without waiting 3 months and then, you know, and then say, oh, well, we're going to have to do the surgery anyway.
Yeah, we're not doctors. We don't have access to any of the medical reports. So this is completely just an observation from an observation out here in the cheap seats. But there seems to be a pattern with this organization where Doc Krymchik, Doc Hollywood, we like to call him, has misdiagnosed or taken too long to diagnose, or there's just been lots of issues that we've seen out of diagnoses from this medical staff that have been wrong or have caused the Reds problems down the road. I don't know, but I want to know the answer to whether or not could this surgery been performed months ago, when Volquez first went on the DL? Could they have gone in there and figured it out? Because if he has to be out, you know, at least 12 months, you know, at least that would maybe get him back into action sometime next year when the Reds are supposedly hoping to contend. Now, Will Carroll, I mentioned him from Baseball Prospectus, he says that the part about the torn flexor mass is really, really scary. So that's the part that might keep him off, on the shelf for longer than even the worst case scenario on a Tommy John surgery. So that's really bad. Not that he can't come back from it, but it's not the ordinary state of things in a Tommy John surgery. So I'm worried that we may never see the same Edinson Volquez again.
Yeah, I'm concerned about that too, and it would just be another in a long line of Reds players that pitchers, especially whose careers ended early, dating back to in my era, Wayne Simpson, Gary Nolan, and even to a different extent, right, Jim Maloney. His wasn't an arm, but
you mentioned Gary Nolan. You guys out there listening, one or two of you that are listening, you should go look at Gary Nolan's stats before he got injured.
They're
incredible, aren't
they?
I don't think people remember how spectacular he was at that young age.
Yeah, I don't really remember Gary when he was a fireballing young guy. I remember him more in the early 70s after he was coming back from his arm surgery. And what had become more of a crafty
right
pitcher.
He was a dominant, though, before he had to come back and relearn how to pitch. So, well, we'll hope for the best on Volquez. We'll hope that the Red staff did everything they were supposed to have done, that this absolutely could not have been avoided and couldn't have been found out sooner. And because I don't know, but I don't want to assign blame where, there's not necessarily any blame to be assigned. But
I will.
I
blame the WBC and baseball.
And that's a couple other items that I think that share some extent of the blame. I don't think we can assign how much, but there's no question. That World Baseball Classic, Volquez felt the pressure, obviously, to pitch in it. And what came out this week that really just ate at me was found out that in his first start in winter ball, Volquez threw 99 pitches, even though the Reds specifically told him to throw 50, no more than 50. And they wouldn't even found out about that if they hadn't been playing against Cueto's team, and Cueto's pitching coach has a relationship with somebody with the Reds and said, hey, wait a minute, I counted his pitches, 99. I know those guys are being paid down there a good bit of money to play in that, and they also feel some societal pressure to play in that winter ball. I know the culture's different, but, yeah, I agree with you. I think that has to be high on the list of when you talk about the number of innings he threw for the Reds last year was more than he'd ever thrown. So you add that on top of it, yeah, it just it boggles the mind that they have this guy that's an all-star and can't prevent him from overworking himself, and now it's probably killed the Reds for a couple years.
Yeah, and leaves a humongous hole in this rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that very rarely have I seen a pitcher who, when he is on, has that crazy stuff like Volquez has. He has the crazy hair, too, which I like, but his stuff is just movement and just electric. And I'm afraid that we may never see that Volquez again. It really concerns me. And I think the Reds ought to have I know there are lots of pressures and lots of things the Reds have to deal with respect to that winter ball and the World Baseball Classic, but this is a guy that they were counting on, and I think somebody dropped the ball. I don't know if they could have done anything differently, but it looks to me.
Well, and let's not excuse
exactly the player. Exactly.
You know, let's have some personal responsibility on Edwin Volquez too. Now he's young and all that stuff, but you got to know where your bread's buttered. You know, I think back to when I was a kid. I was a 12-year-old, and this just reminds me of Wayne Simpson. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that parallel doesn't hold up, but that's what it's reminding
now,
me of.
I pray that you're wrong about that as well. But you're right about Volquez. The Reds have a big investment. But, Volquez's whole career and livelihood is counting on that right arm. So he's got he's a young guy, but he needs to listen to what he's told, I guess, about trying to protect that arm so that he can have a long career. And I'm afraid that's not going to happen now. But we'll see. I'm going to try to be optimistic about that. But even at the most optimistic, I don't expect to see Volquez back in the rotation until 2011. And that's a long way away.
I think if you see him next year at all, you'll see him in some relief roles. He'll come in maybe and throw some innings just to get some throwing in, to get some time in and to rehab the arm a little bit.
All right. We've been putting it off for long enough. Let's discuss this. A couple of items this week in the news that were sort of related to each other. Number one is that the Reds have talked about moving one of their top prospects. Well, they've actually done it. They're not just talking about it now. Move their Todd Frazier to second base in Carolina. And number two, somebody asked Brandon Phillips, hey, Brandon, they're moving this top prospect to second base. Brandon, obviously the incumbent second baseman in Cincinnati. What do you think about it? And his thoughts were, well, either I'm going to be traded or they're going to want me to move to shortstop. And, of course, he said he'd be willing to move to shortstop. And Jocketty said, well, we've not had any of those internal discussions, but something's got to give. How does all this play out? What do you think?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they look to trade Phillips in the offseason. I don't think he's turned into the – I think the Reds thought he was going to be a star. And he's not a star. He's never going to be a star. And you wonder whether the Reds have had enough of his, you know, playing kind of hard when he wants to thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if they looked to trade him over the offseason. Whether you'll get anybody to take him for what the Reds believe he's worth, who knows. The move in Frazier to second base, no matter what the Reds' internals are saying, you know, when they talk to the press, doesn't make any sense unless they're going to move Phillips. It's the only way that Frazier playing second base makes any sense at all.
Absolutely. Because Frazier's a guy that they've got to count on being a major leaguer within a couple years. And if Brandon Phillips is still relatively young, if he's in their long-term plans, yeah, something's got to give. Personally, I wouldn't have a problem, and I've been sort of wanting to see it for the last couple of years. I thought last year, after the Reds were out, it would have been a good time to shift Brandon over to shortstop and see how he did there. And, you know, I'd say the same thing now since the Reds are playing without a shortstop most nights. They run a guy named Alex Gonzalez out there, but he's not a major league caliber player anymore. And I think I wouldn't have a problem with Phillips at short. I think that he becomes more valuable. I think that his hitting stats are more impressive when you compare him to shortstops around the league than they are with second basemen. And I think that, frankly, it patches a hole that the Reds have, whereas it's easier to go out and find a second baseman than it is to find a shortstop that can handle the job defensively. And
right. Expensive.
Yeah. I just think that Phillips is a gold glove second baseman. I don't think anybody has any complaints about what he gives you defensively. His range is outstanding. And I'm just an idiot talking and writing on a blog. And I don't know what the Reds know, but from this observer standpoint, looks like he ought to be able to handle that shortstop position. I can't see why not. Frazier, I think, would be an excellent Major League second baseman if he continues to progress. And I think the Reds would have a very valuable commodity on their hand if he can handle second base defensively. And he was a shortstop, so you think he might be able to.
Yeah, the questions I have about this whole thing right now is if they're thinking about moving him, Phillips, the shortstop, why not do it now? And the other thing is, Frazier at second base, he's 6'3", 215. My guess is, and I'm just guessing now, and I haven't done any research, I would bet that would make him in the top 10% of the biggest second baseman in Major League Baseball.
I believe it. Ron?
And I don't know enough about the position to say whether that's a positive or a negative, but it's an awful big guy.
It said the same things about Jeff Kent, you know, not to say that Frazier's going to be Jeff Kent, but
true.
And at a different position, they said the same things about Cal Ripken at shortstop, you know, bigger than anyone else. So that's not to, I agree with you. It's not to say that it's not going to necessarily work, but, you know, we're picking out examples that are sort of few and far between here. It doesn't happen often. Yeah.
But I would not. I'll go on the record right now and say Todd Frazier makes this team out of spring training next year.
I don't know if that'll happen or not, but I would not have the first problem if he made the team out of spring training as a starting second baseman, assuming they've moved Phillips to short or traded him and somehow otherwise filled the shortstop position. What do you think about, some people have mentioned this possibility, and this is all just complete speculation. There's nothing behind it, no rumor or anything behind it, but moving Phillips to shortstop and then looking, because they think they can compete next year, supposedly, looking at signing a guy like Orlando Hudson, who's with Los Angeles this year. He'll be a free agent again. He just signed a one-year deal. Signing him on a one- or two-year deal at second base.
I'll be honest, I don't know enough about
great
him
defensive
really
second baseman, and he'll hit enough to justify his position in the lineup is what the way I look at Hudson.
If Frazier can play defensively second base, you know, at a reasonable level, I'd rather have Frazier there.
I think that moving Phillips to short and putting Frazier second is an upgrade over what we currently have. I think probably offensively and arguably defensively over the Gonzalez at short, Phillips at second combo. I think there's no question, obviously, that Frazier will hit better than Gonzalez in the majors. That's and, you know, I think that he'll get on base enough to where he could really be an asset to the offensive rank. I think that Frazier could even be a number two type hitter next year in the major leagues. And I think later on he'll eventually evolve into, you know, four or five in the lineup type hitter. But that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about him making the team out of spring training next year, but I don't see any reason why he couldn't. I mean, he's just such a impressive guy.
There's going to be some holes on. There's going to be some holes to be filled on this team, and the Reds aren't going to have a whole lot of money to spend. So you have to believe some of these young guys in the minor leagues at the double and triple A level are going to make this team out of spring training.
Yeah. Just because I'll tell you a guy that I don't think, and we'll see if I'm wrong about this, but I'm going to predict right now, will not make this team out of spring training next year, even if we see him in September or something this year, and that's Drew Stubbs. I don't think he'll make the team out of spring training next year, even though he's a clear upgrade over Willy Taveras. I believe Willy Taveras is going to be your starting center fielder on opening day and leading off in 2010. After you vomit, you can come back and say what you have to say about that.
I don't agree with you. I think the Reds will find some way to package Taveras in part of another deal and get him out of here. I think they'll realize that they can't take another year of the PR disaster that Willy Taveras has been in center field. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to be Drew Stubbs or Chris Heisey out there, but opening day center fielder next year will not be really
good. Well, I don't agree, because I think that if the Reds were that concerned about the PR disaster, et cetera, they would at the very least have leaned on Dusty to bat the guy eighth in the lineup rather than let him suck up outs at the top of the lineup every single night. I think that they think he's better than what he's playing, and I just think he'll be back for at least another shot. He may only be back for a month or two next year before they finally give up on him, but I do think he'll get another shot next year. I hope you're right. And I don't know that Stubbs is going to be an above-average hitter next year in the major leagues. He'll get on base at a good enough clip to where he'll be an upgrade offensively over Taveras. But his defense, by all accounts, he'd immediately become one of the top four or five defensive center fielders in the majors. And
you know, and I've talked to guys, and Doug Gray, I think, is another guy that believes this, that they say that Heisey is almost as good defensively as Stubbs. And I think Heisey will be a better hitter than Stubbs will in the big leagues. I'm not saying he'll have a higher on-base percentage. He'll have a higher slugging percentage. I don't know where the OPS thing will fall. But just a snapshot from Sunday night when we went down to watch Matt pitch down in Louisville, Heisey hits the ball hard. Stubbs isn't necessarily a guy that really, really rips it. I'm not saying that he's not effective. That's not what I'm trying to say. But I think Heisey will be a better offense.
I don't know that anybody would necessarily disagree with you about that. I think with Stubbs, it's that he's such an outstanding defensive center fielder and that he'll get on base at a good enough clip to where he's going to be – you can justify putting him in the lineup, you know.
And he stole, 34 out of 42 or something?
He's a smart player, evidently. His knowledge of the strike zone's gotten better every year. He's getting on a base at a pretty good clip, you know. But, yeah, I agree. I don't think he'll ever hit like Heisey. I think what the Reds are going to come down to, and, you know, we talked about the Steve Price at RedLegNation.com had a pretty good article the other day. He's doing a series of these Red Leg trade reviews that are outstanding. If you haven't checked those out, everyone out there needs to go look at those. But one was about the Larkin-Stillwell trade when they had to decide who to keep over Barry Larkin and Kurt Stillwell. And obviously they made the right choice, and I don't think either Stubbs or Heisey are going to be a Barry Larkin, you know, Hall of Fame type player. But it's going to be a case where I think Heisey's value in the major leagues is going to be maximized if he's playing in center field, because his offense will be, he'll be able to handle it defensively, and his offense will be above average for center fielders. I think if you got to move him over to a corner outfield spot, his offense is not going to be that special. I think he can be a major leaguer at a corner spot, but I don't think he's going to be a special major leaguer. I think he could be special in center field.
Yeah, the guys that I've talked to about Heisey and Stubbs defensively, they both say that different people have told me. I've had people tell me that they think Heisey's better.
Is that right?
Defensively. Yeah, and like I said, Doug knows a lot more about this stuff than I do. But I can't remember which one. One of them, I think it's Drew, plays very deep and keeps everything in front of him. And I watched Drew play center field for a season in Dayton, and he makes difficult plays look routine. And Heisey played left field when he was in Dayton. And what I've been told is Heisey plays the ball, plays very, very shallow, so not much gets hit down in front of him, but he goes back on the ball very well.
Yeah.
So they play a different kind of center field, but I've had people tell me that they think Heisey is good or better in center field than Stubbs. Now, I have a hard time believing that. That would put him as a pretty daggone good center fielder.
Yeah, definitely. Because Stubbs is outstanding. What about this? Let's say Stubbs makes the team next year as their starting center fielder. He's a clear upgrade defensively, clear upgrade offensively over Tavares. Even though Stubbs is not going to be a great offensive player, he'll get on base a little bit. And, of course, neither he or Tavares hit with any power much. Although everybody keeps saying Stubbs' power is going to come around. It hadn't yet. But what about you get him? There, you got Jay Bruce back in right field. You got Frazier at second base and move Phillips over to short. You got Rowland at third and Votto at first. Hannigan gets on base at a pretty good clip at catcher. If the Reds have enough money to go out and find a left fielder, I don't know who's going to be out there. They got no margin for error because there'll be no depth. There's nobody backing up these guys. But
you'll have like
right.
a Heisey on the
but,
bench.
But after that, you're talking about you get another injury to a guy like Bruce or something, and it's just like this year, they have no depth in the organization ready to step up necessarily. But, you know, that could be, if things go well, could be, depending on who they get to fill left field, an okay lineup.
Let me throw a name.
Oh,
Jason
man.
Bay.
I'd love to have him. I don't think.
Somebody put that to me the other day, and I said, I've got two problems with that. It's one, I don't think Boston's going to let him get away. And even if they did, I don't think the Reds.
Well, that's
going to
be the two issues. Bay's been exceptional for Boston. I don't know what Boston has, if they've got somebody ready to take over, if they've got somebody they're eyeing on the free agent market because they can afford to go after whoever they've got. But I would like to have Bay if he'd be willing to. I don't know if he played for the Pirates for years. And now he's had a taste of winning with Boston. I don't know if he wants to go back to playing for the Pirates again, which is frankly what the Reds are right now. Convincing him to come here is an issue as well.
Which means
exactly,
you probably have to overpay.
Exactly. Until the Reds start winning and have a different sort of atmosphere around this organization, it's going to be tough to get guys to come to Cincinnati. So that'd be the other issue. But I think that he would fit in very well and immediately, again, if we can keep some guys relatively healthy and make the right moves of moving some of these guys, not starting Willie Tavares, and making the right moves otherwise, there's a chance that they could cobble together a decent lineup. Then, of course, it becomes pitching, and I don't know where we are with pitching for next year.
Yeah, I mean, only time's going to tell, is Homer going to – has he finally gotten over the hump? Is Maloney going to be anything? What about, Matt Klinker, who's now at Louisville, the Ramirez kid. There's a lot of guys down there, whether they
get
Lair. The pitching situation mm-hmm. right now is a mess between, is Owings, is he worth keeping as a number five? Is Jared Burton, is he the next David Weathers? Is he the next setup guy here?
I had hoped he was the next closer here until this year. Burton. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a very disappointing year if you're a Jared Burton.
Which I am. I think 3 months ago the pitching looked like the clear strength, and now it's in limbo, as you say, which, again, why do we – when you look at who we got coming up, you mentioned those names in the minor leagues – there was only one name down there that I saw, now that Bailey has sort of graduated to the majors, that I thought was sort of a high ceiling, number two possible type starter, two or three even, and that was Zach Stewart. Are there any other high ceiling arms that are anywhere close to the majors? Maybe Travis Wood.
I was just going to say, and I don't know that much about Travis, but it's hard to argue with the numbers he's put up this year. I think the Reds were very slow on getting
him to
Triple A. I think he should have moved up at the All-Star break, and then you could have really seen what he was doing in the second half of the season. And I wouldn't be opposed to them giving him a September call-up, since they got a big old humongous hole in their rotation for next year.
See if he can earn one of the spots next year. Absolutely. Yeah, they got.
Yeah, you know, give him two or three starts. You know, give him a couple of starts, maybe three starts in September. See what he looks like.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt. You know, the Reds are losing no matter who they're running out there. Can't hurt to at least give him a shot and see if he can grab the brass ring, as they say. Yeah, there's just a lot of questions to be answered. You identify most of those. Homer and Micah Owings, you know, and you know, there's a lot of, now with Volquez out, I don't know how they're going to answer these questions, but that's going to be something to watch over the next 6 months or so.
And what's sad is that we're talking about the off season and next year, and it is August
just began, 9th. And that's right. It's sad, but this is a traditional yearly thing for Reds fans. It seems like 9 straight losing seasons are all but assured at this point. It's about to.
I'll say the same thing that I say about being a Bengals fan. If you're a Reds fan these days,
that's
you
right.
gotta want it.
Yeah, and if you're sticking with this team, you have earned your bona fides as a Reds fan. Nobody that's listening to this podcast or that comes to Red Leg Nation every day, or especially those of us that waste our time writing about the Reds every day.
Or the guys that have been on my listserv.
Right,
for 10,
absolutely. The Reds listserv, Melig list. Yeah, you take all those names that we're talking about right there. The next time the Reds are good and winning ball games, whenever that happens, and going to the playoffs, there better never be anybody that questions whether any of us are bandwagon fans or anything like that, because you talk about.
The Reds should get us a flatbed truck to be
that's,
in the
that's absolutely right,
parade.
Because we stuck through them through thick and thin. We may complain, but guess what? Not here 9 years into this losing streak, we're still here. So we deserve some kind of credit
that's right.
Well, anything else you want to talk about before we sign off here?
Well, I did get a news flash while we've been talking here, and even though it's not going to help, this won't be posted then, but Matt is pitching tonight.
Okay, Matt Klinker, one of our spotlight players at Red Leg Nation, and we've just been really tickled at his progress this year, is going to be starting in Louisville, and so another start, so that's good news. He didn't have his best start his first time out, so we'll look forward to cheering him on tonight, and at some point we're going to it's probably going to be not till next spring, but at some point we're going to try to set up Red Leg Nation get-togethers, outings, both at Great American Ballpark and at down at Louisville. And we'd like to see at least two of our, hopefully. It'd be nice to see two of our spotlight guys in Louisville next year. We'll see how that works out. There's a lot of different variables, obviously, there. But it'd be good to set up an outing at both places. So everybody keep your eyes on that, and we'll try to pick some good dates. But we'll cheer on Matt tonight. What are you expecting out of him tonight?
I just hope he gets these. Like I said, we talked earlier before we went on. I went down Sunday night and watched him pitch. Got a chance to spend a few minutes talking to Matt's parents, who were very, very nice people. And he just never looked comfortable on the mound to me. He didn't look to me like, and I'm not a pitching coach, God knows. Looked to me like he couldn't locate his breaking ball. He was uncharacteristically wild. I think he walked 4 guys in 3 2/3. Might have been nerves. I don't know. You know, who am I to say? But second start, you expect him to be a little calmer, a little more, you know, a little more relaxed. He's not pitching in front of his family and friends. They're on the road. That may help. I don't know. But
absolutely.
We'll definitely be rooting for him.
All right. One more thing I wanted to get your thoughts about. I don't think we've discussed this yet, and I thought we ought to at least mention it. It looks like the Dayton Daily News has decided they're not going to be covering the Reds in the same way after this season, and not going to have a beat writer following the team every day, which means that Hal McCoy is sort of being forced to retire at the Dayton Daily News. You know, he's been around for years, forever, longer than any of us, just about.
I think Hal started there when they were still chiseling the news in. Like,
that's
the
right, yeah.
Stones,
he was the first beat writer in the area, absolutely. Well, he's been there the longest.
I think he covered the.
Yeah, he had a wonderful series of articles that are about those. He and Harry Wright used to go out for a beer after the games. It was a classic. But now that we're finished making fun of how old he is, what do you think about the fact that Hal McCoy, number one, is no longer going to be around, and number two, that, you know, just a couple years ago, there were three newspapers covering the Reds on a day-to-day basis, and that has dwindled to one. Do you have any thoughts about that, and if so, what are they?
Well, I've never been a real big Hal McCoy fan, but I may not have been reading the Dayton Daily News when he was in his heyday. It was before the days of the internet, so I mean, I lived in Cincinnati. The paper wasn't as accessible. So that being that's one part of the issue. I think any time we as fans, and this isn't just about sports, this is any time we get less information, it's not good. And if you have less beat writers, even though they duplicate each other, John Fay and Hal McCoy, a lot of times they're writing the same type of articles on the same player on the same days. But you're getting a little bit of a different perspective, and I think any time you lose a source of information, it's not a good thing. But it says more. I think this says more about the state of newspapers in this country than it does about baseball or anything else.
Yeah, you know, and my post at Red Leg Nation was entitled "The State of Daily Baseball Coverage," and I titled it that because it's changing, and this is another data point in that. Yeah, I'm with you in terms of Hal McCoy. Everybody wants to be kind, but I don't think he's been at the top of his game for a number of years. But there are at one time, certainly during his heyday, there are a lot of people in and around the Dayton area that'll tell you he was their link to the Reds, and a lot of people just I don't think it's an overstatement to say that Hal McCoy is beloved by a certain group of Reds fans. He certainly put in his time. I don't think it's a good thing either. I think that things are changing, though. You know, you've got sites like Red Leg Nation and some of the other Reds blogs that are giving some of that opinion and analysis of what's going on in Reds land that you didn't have before. People are less dependent on the Hal McCoys and the John Fays. And obviously, Mark Sheldon's still around with MLB.com. And, of course, Trent Rosecrans was with the Post until they gave up the ghost. But
and then he moved to Clear Champ, and then they cut that position.
Exactly. Things are different, but I don't think it's a good thing for Reds fans. I think the more voices you have out there, the better. I think that even if they are duplicative sometimes, I think that, what they did provide was valuable, each of them in their own right. And I hate to see it happening, but that's the way the world is right now. The newspaper industry, frankly, is collapsing under their own weight. And I don't know what the model is going to be going forward. We're not making any money at Red Leg Nation. We're doing it because we love this team. So this isn't the financial model of the future, but blogs and this sort of type of analysis is part of the mix. I just hate to see these guys kicked to the curb because I think they do still provide something valuable to us. So we wish Hal the best of luck, obviously.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
That's duplicative, huh?
Them $5 words.
That's right. That's a lawyer word. The big thing is whether it was intended or not. These beat writers are the fans' access to the players in the front office. The loss of that gives not only the fans and the general fans, but even us, because the front offices of especially the major league teams, 99% of them, don't see even blogs that try to be responsible, as I think we do. Don't see us as an alternative. Maybe they will at some point or not. You know, some of the minor league teams have been very kind to us. We're very lucky that we've got a good relationship with some of the minor league squads. But I think it's going to be a loss of information and access for the fans into the thinkings and workings of the team and the front office. And to me, that in terms of sports – or baseball, in more specifically.
Yeah, there are sort of two different sides to baseball coverage. One is reporting, and one's analysis, opinion. And I think blogs, in a lot of ways, from the fans' perspective, blogs like Red Leg Nation and some of the other great Reds blogs that are out there do a good job, I think, being the voice of the fans. But these reporters, these beat writers, they're in the clubhouse. They're more the eyes and the ears of the fans. They get to go places that you know, we don't get to go, and you know, they can report back to us on things like that. I don't think their strength was the analysis. I think that the places like Red Leg Nation do a much better job, not to toot our own horn, but in all the Reds blogs, with analysis and opinion on the Reds. But we can't do that as well without having those reporters in place doing their job, which is different from what I don't think it's a direct competition. I think it's more of a symbiotic relationship where we need each other and to get the full coverage of the Reds that everybody wants. And yeah, it's not going to be as good for Reds fans because we're not going to have those eyes and ears in the clubhouse and reporting back things that you and I don't see on a daily basis. I agree with you. It's not a good thing. I want to mention this. I linked to a guy named John Weissman. He's a Dodger blogger in my post on this, and I thought it was a pretty good way to frame the debate. He talked about it back when Tony Jackson was laid off as an L.A. Dodger beat writer, and of course he used to be here in Cincinnati as well. And he said that Weissman said, "I don't think there's any doubt that individual readers have more information about the Dodgers," he says, "also the Reds, than they did 10 years ago. Then you had access to only game stories and notebooks published once a day. Today, there's a constant stream of rich information and, I think what's more important, analysis now. I think we're well past the point of relying only on the reporter in the clubhouse. Nevertheless, you still need that reporter." And, of course, he says the best-case scenario would be for readers or benefactors to stake a credible person to writing and blogging about the Dodgers full-time, covering them inside and out. And if that were important enough to enough people or the right people, it would happen. But I sense, he says, that given the choice between accepting the new status quo for free or paying a small amount for more, the marketplace will tend to choose free, which means that we're going to be with fewer, have to deal with fewer reporters and, you know, do the best we can on our side with the analysis. So, yeah. Final thoughts before we close up shop on this latest edition of the podcast.
At this point, I don't see a whole lot of reason to watch another Reds game the rest of the year. There isn't even anything I want to watch at this point. Maybe when Jay gets back from, and there was something in the Enquirer this morning. He's getting close. He got his cast off. He's lifting and doing range of motion, that kind of thing. And he says he is not going to shut it down. He says he's going to play for the end of the season. Whether that's smart or not, I don't know. But other than Jay Bruce, there really isn't a whole lot to me worth watching the rest of the season on the major league level. On the minor league level.
What about the veteran leadership? You don't look for that? That's not something you're excited to watch over the next couple months? Come on.
He's been here, a week, and he's missed two games already.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying he was shirking or anything like that. The man got hit in the head by a
fastball. I did cry like a girl when I watched him get hit. So quit.
But nevertheless, it's just ongoing saga.
Yeah, well, that'll be something to watch. It's not going to be much fun to watch. But, yeah, the things to watch now that are interesting to see how they play out are a lot fewer than they were. You know, we were talking before the season, all the things we were excited to see about this year. You know, Volquez and Jay Bruce were two of the top ones. And of course they're not playing right now. So I'll keep watching as much as I can, but it's not going to be easy and there's not going to be a whole lot to watch for. I agree. So. Oh, I do.
You must have a strong stomach.
Well, a couple things I did want to mention before we sign off. We named our players of the month for July, and I wanted to go ahead and highlight those just briefly here at the end. Joey Votto won the Red Leg Nation Player of the Month for July 2009 again. That's the second time this year he's won it. And we consider he didn't even play for a full month. That's 2 out of 3 months that he has played that he won it. Not a surprise. Hit .324, .352 on base percentage, .598 slugging, 7 homers, 13 RBIs. Great month. He is. He
As
keeps
Chris Welch says,
plugging away.
Joey
even
Votto
when he's hit a little bit of a rough streak here, he's still producing and he's still the cog. He's the straw that stirs the drink right now, so in Cincinnati.
Yeah, he is. Lance McAllister had a thing on his blog last week about Joey. And I think Lance, I don't know whether Lance is just looking for something to complain about or whatever, but apparently Joey's. His strikeout numbers have been up a little bit lately and yada, yada, yada. But to me,
Yeah, he's just about the one piece of this puzzle here in Cincinnati that not much to complain about. He comes to work just about every day and does his job. So, also receiving votes in the Player of the Month for July 2009, Coco Cordero, good month, 1.08 ERA, 5 saves, because they only won about 5 games the whole month. And sadly, Edwin Encarnacion, who had an OPS over 900 during the month of July since coming back from his, with 4 homers, 10 RBI since coming back from the disabled list. And he's moved on to Toronto. Minor League Players of the Month, Minor League Pitcher of the Month for July 2009. And I never know how to pronounce this guy's name. I'm sure I mispronounce it every time. Ben Jukic, do you know how to pronounce that? Jukic? I don't know. But he went 3-0 during
Jukic,
July.
I'm not sure that's
1.62
right
ERA, won the Player of the Month award for Red Leg Nation, for minor league pitchers at Red Leg Nation. Allowed fewer than one base runner in innings, struck out 11, struck out 30, walked 11. Really outstanding month. And then the hitter of the month, minor league hitter of the month, Kevin Barker, first baseman down in Louisville, who had an OPS over 1,000, hit 368 with 5 home runs and 22 RBIs, 9 doubles, walked 12 times. This guy, he's about 60 years old, but he's had a really outstanding season. OPS over 900, 21 homers. And this is a guy, and I'll admit that I'm prejudiced because he went to high school fairly close to where I did, and he was just a little bit behind me in school, which means I'm 60 years old too. But we're not going to say, but he's a guy that is not a prospect. he spent some time in the bigs with Milwaukee there a while back, and he's had a taste. But I'd like to see before his career's over. He's earned a chance to. Frankly, I thought he should have come up when Votto was out earlier this year to at least be the backup first baseman. But I wish they'd call him up in September and just give him another chance to experience the big league life. He's really hit the ball well. I think he's Louisville's all-time leading home run hitter at this point in AAA. So he's sort of one of those quadruple A guys, but he won our Player of the Month.
I think he deserves. I mean, I think they should reward the guy for a great season with at least a September call up. But the problem with
that's true. That's true.
If you do that, then you rob Louisville of the
take that into account, certainly, because well.
But I will tell you this: I was going into my senior year of high school when Kevin Barker was.
I'm sorry, I'll never call him old again. He's old for baseball, I guess. Yeah, he's been around a while, been knocking around. I know, but when we're talking about minor league prospects,
he's
wouldn't.
He's only 33. Yeah, I know. Well,
exactly. He's not a guy that we're expecting to be part of the next good Reds team. But he's a guy that I would like to see rewarded for that outstanding season. You're right with respect to Louisville in the playoffs, but I think if you ask Kevin Barker, which he'd prefer to do, I think he'd take the September call-up. So I'd like to see it for him.
Oh, I would think so. Look, I'm looking at his numbers, and he's played almost 100 games in the big league.
Yeah,
he's
a guy that I think
he
got the tag of being one of those 4A guys, and I don't know if he ever would have hit well enough to be a starting first baseman in the majors, which is the deal. But he's a guy that wouldn't kill you to bring him up and sit him on your bench, even though he can only play really one position. But that's better than a guy like, Alex Gonzalez, who can't play any positions. So that's right. Yeah, he's equally bad at about 7 different positions.
Wilton Castillo.
And not to make fun of a guy while he's out for the year injured, but we've been saying that since they got him. But no, that's not a new one. All right. Well, I guess that's about all for the podcast today. A lot to discuss, and we'll surely have a lot to discuss next time around because there's always something crazy going on at Red Leg Nation. Now, appreciate all you all joining us out there today. As always, mention this every week. Any comments, concerns, suggestions, send those to radio@redlegnation.com. Subscribe via iTunes to the podcast, and you can download all previous episodes of the podcast there as well. You can also go to the tab up the top of Red Leg Nation that says RN Radio, and there you got links to be able to download all the previous editions of Red Leg Nation Radio. We're getting up there now. We're bearing down on 40 podcasts, so it's been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you being with us again this week, Bill. Yeah, we're going to change your name on the blog to Veteran Leader Bill Lack. Thanks again to all you loyal citizens of Red Leg Nation out there for listening. For Bill Lack, this is Chad Dotson saying so long.